Hey there, listeners. As always, you're listening to Blind Date, the show where each month I bring you an artistic individual from Louisville, its sister cities, and beyond. Today, my guest is Alexander W.G. Rickle. W.G. Rickle is a sculptor, illustrator, musician, and possibly actor. His sculptures usually have a retrofuturistic look, kind of like antique technology from a time that never was, with heavy symbolic meaning, but I'm going to let him explain all that to you. Does a great job. He's very articulate and, you know, very graceful with his words. I'm going to let you guys finish out this track. It's a Brian Eno track. Here come the warm jets. Enjoy. Your work definitely, it seems like kind of a mix of like Nikola Tesla and like Lost in Space, has that kind of very retrofuturistic kind of feel to it. Is that something you strive for, like purposely?
I think in the beginning, you know, like when I was in school for art, I didn't start making this stuff, you know, like I was playing around with all kinds of things first and... By the time I had made these things that looked like eggs with these big holes in them, and I entered them into a juried show, this set of three, and they didn't make it in. And the juror only wrote with red pen, which is the worst, on the slip, not creative enough. That was the only feedback. And that wrecked
that
me
is
a
not
bit.
Constructive at all,
no,
by the way.
Not at all. And so at that point, I was just like, well, whatever. Okay. I don't need to make. I was trying to be something else. I was trying to be profound and, you know, sort of ethereal. And so I just said, screw it. And I just started to make robots. And I liked these little robots I used to draw. And I made one, and then I made another, and then I thought, this is great. I'm going to make a spaceship, and it just kind of took off from there. And so in the beginning, I had to sort of pound out and find how I like to make things. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a fan of, like, the Star Wars used universe, you know?
Yeah.
Like, loved teddy bear idea. Like, if you like something, if it goes to work, it gets dirty, you know? And that sort of automatically brings a life to things. So it was a couple years of sort of figuring out what I wanted, but, you know, eventually it really sort of hit its swing, and now it's all very second nature. You know, I kind of have the people that know me and work around me and with me, you know, make jokes about, you know, it's a very Alex thing to do, or, you know, if it's something super dirty or broken, you know, I'm always the one that comes up. So it took a little bit, but yeah, I've set out to do it in a way, and now it's just sort of what I know I really like and what I know I enjoy. And
yeah.
So, you know, you'll see I have some vacuum tubes over there, and I've got all kinds of things tucked around that I like that inspire me. And,
are those tubes you actually made, or are they actual, like...
There's a couple little guys that I have. That actually, I got them from my grandpa, who's an engineer.
Oh, awesome.
And he just, you know, he's the kind of guy that could.
Do you have any engineering background?
No. Unless I inherited it genetically through my grandpa, which I think I might have. All the engineering I do is it's not formal, I guess, but I read a lot, and I like to study things, and I figured out. So, yeah, I set out to make things that look like the things I like, but there's also a big, always a battle in my head, you know, and I draw things that can be really clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of make what, like, maybe would be the, like, our world version of it, the clean, practical version. Mm-hmm. I kind of draw that out. And then when I set out to make it, I'm using hot glass and fire and fusing metal into the glass and welding and wood. And I just have all these soldering on the wood. And I have all these great opportunities to destroy things and kind of show that there's this bit of sacrifice and chaos that goes into making something. And I like that. It's heavy. So I just kind of let that process become a part of the final result.
Yeah.
For a while, I faked things like that. I faked burn marks and, like, growing decay and stuff.
Yeah.
And I did enjoy it, and I got some great results, but I've gotten to the point where I don't want to fake anything. I just want it to be very elemental, very much of, you know, just the result of it becoming real, you know, and that's what the little scars and things you see. So.
Yeah. Is there a huge difference, I guess, between the drawings and the actual finished products?
Again, that's something that's kind of always been in flux, you know.
Yeah.
There was a point when I wasn't making a whole lot, and it's 'cause I didn't have access to studios to make things. And those drawings that I made during that time were very detailed and very, you know, thought out. And sometimes when I am sketching, I'll really enjoy the sort of illustrative marks that represent something else, you know, little dots or scars. And and then when I actually get to making a piece, I like to let the process influence it quite a bit. And so similar to letting the burn marks happen and things, you know.
Yeah.
And so then I'll kind of been in a phase recently where when I draw stuff, like first plan, you know, just had this shape or this idea pop into my head, I'll just do a really simple thumbnail, you know, and just keep it as gestural as possible. Just quick little marks and squiggles and some little scratching for a dirty area, you know.
Yeah.
And the more I make work, the more I realize that if I could only make things as good as my 3-second sketch, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's what I try really hard to do. And so as far as planning, it's almost like I do these little thumbnails and then just set myself up for, you know, disappointment, because I really love the thumbnail. And then
maybe a more positive side is maybe you leave yourself more open.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Open to kind of letting it.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, have that same energy. And so then they kind of go back and forth. You know, I like, there's something I do to a lot of the wood bases in my work. I'll take just a hot piece of metal rod that I've shaped the end into, like, kind of a round or sort of pointed tip.
Yeah.
And I'll get that so it's glowing hot, and I'll touch that to the wood and make all these sort of freckles and burn marks. Because that was, you know, actually just came from one time I was drawing something, and I I just made all these little dots on the side of it, like, oh, it'd be a neat little
yeah.
bit of something. And so then they kind of go back and forth, you know, or I'll see something happen naturally, like I'm grinding and, you know, smoothing out a surface of a piece of glass, and I'll rub a bit of marker on it to kind of show the high spots and low spots, and I'll grind a bit more away, and then it leaves these really great sort of hash mark lines, mm-hmm. and I think, oh, that's great. And then the next time I'm drawing something, I'm drawing those lines in, you know. So it's kind of naturally coming to a place where they balance each other out. So sometimes I draw something and I end up making it and it looks just like it, or sometimes I draw something and throughout making the thing, I've found ways of putting it together or relationships I like more, and I'd go with that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you like study a lot of like actual electronic and like, what am I trying to say here? Well, do you study a lot of diagrams of like actual electronics, like either modern day or antique, and like do you strive to make them look similar? Like, do you strive to make them look realistic when you're actually making one of your sculptures, or you just kind of pull from the air? Like,
it's a good question. I do study a lot of stuff. Actually, the last body of work that I made, and really still what I'm continuing, and you'll figure out why in a second. It's titled The Modern Dictionary of Electronics,
mm-hmm.
Which is actually the title of a dictionary I got from one of my best friends. Her name is Karen. And when we were in college, she would take these books and paint and draw and kind of turn them into a diary, but just sort of find things in it and edit mm-hmm. things out. She had this one on her shelf, and it was titled The Modern Dictionary of Electronics, and she's going to use it. And I saw it, and I fell in love with it, so she gave it to me. And it sat around for a couple of years, and I'll look at it occasionally before I really got into this sort of work. And it has become sort of my Bible, you know.
Hmm.
When I'll think of a piece, and I'll just think of, like, big shapes and kind of something I want to make, and then I'll start flipping through this book and reading about different concepts and ideas. And I should mention, too, it was published in 1964. So that's something I really like about sort of the irony of
yeah.
the modern dictionary and it being so old, and everything is rather outdated. But I like that era of electronic technology because everything was pretty obvious, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas now we have these phones that are just these beautiful windows, and you touch them, and it's sort of magic. There's yeah. a great Arthur C. Clarke quote.
Mm-hmm.
Any sufficient means of technological advancement is indistinguishable from magic. I think something like that, which is so true, you know. And I mean, I know a lot about this stuff, and I look at my phone or my iPad, and I'm just blown away, you know.
Yeah.
And I like that older stuff because it's very honest, you know. You see yeah. these connections, and if you ever look inside of a tube,
mm-hmm.
you have all the little tiny feet popping out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look up inside the glass and you see where all those little feet go. There's a little connection and they do something. It's not just there to be there. It has a purpose. So, yeah, when I'm making my work, I try to take those things that I like the idea of those feet having a purpose. And if I have a plug or a, you know, connection or some little rod or wire on a piece, sometimes I drive myself mad making sure it makes sense in my own way. And I use these things. I never want to make anything from our world. You'll never see a screw or a bolt or anything that's part of our sort of industrialized world in my mm-hmm. work, because I want it to function as its own thing. You know, you
yeah.
step outside of our world to look at my stuff, and it's like it's its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the only way that I think most people could access it, even myself included, is if there is some reference. If it alludes to a tube or you've seen this kind of plug before, you know those are like two terminals that you would like connect
yeah.
a battery to. I like to play with that and see how close I can get without actually doing it in an obvious way. Because it's like leaving a trail of breadcrumbs, you know. You let
yeah.
give people something to, so they know something about it coming into it, you know. Especially when dealing with stuff that's so out there, you know.
Yeah.
If they have a little something, they're sort of ready, you know, that looks like a bulb or whatever, and they can come into it and try to figure it out a bit more from that
yeah.
point.
Speaking of other worlds, before we started recording, you were kind of telling me about this kind of fictional organization you kind of started.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to kind of talk about that a little bit.
It's sure.
Another layer to your art.
Yeah. It's named Conceptual Engineering United,
mm-hmm.
CEU for short. And it started when I was in college. And what I was making wasn't quite the simple circuitry that I'm making now. There's mm-hmm. these like models of spaceships, and I built a time machine, or as the mm-hmm. real name is the transcranial magnetic atemporalizer. and that one in particular, that really helped create the idea of CEU, because mm-hmm. what it was is transcranial magnetic stimulation is a real thing. That's something that is explored currently. It's the pulsating of an electromagnetic radiation into the brain that alters the neural content and, you know, causes people to experience reality in a different way. It changes their perception of reality.
Kind of like a hallucinogen?
Yeah, yeah. You know what? If you, like, push on your eyes for a while, you get those...
Kind of like Dolly used to do.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry.
You push on your eyes for a while, and you see those colors coming mm-hmm. to the sides of your vision. Those are called phosphenes. And that's one of many things that can be induced with this stuff, except your eyes are open, you know, yeah. and you're like seeing these colors. And so I liked that idea, and I thought maybe there's something to it, you know, maybe that mixed with like some sort of hypnosis or something could help unlock the brain. And the idea behind this time machine is that you would travel within your own life. So your mm-hmm. brain has this collection of experiences. It's like recorded everything. Mm-hmm. You couldn't go hang out with Abraham Lincoln or anything, you know. But you could go backwards easier than you can go forwards. And with time and practice, you could go forwards. I wanted it to have limitations. I wanted it to be, like, you know, sort of real if it could be, you know.
Yeah.
So that, making that piece made me realize that I needed, like, something else to speak of when I was talking about it, because it wasn't just me doing this. I wanted it to seem like a group of people, you know, yeah. teams of physicists and scientists and engineers. So that's where this came about. And now I sort of like a cartoon character. I wear the same shirt every day, and I've got a few different shirts, a couple different colors, but I'm a little,
I was going to say there is kind of a character kind of performance aspect, you know, with, you know, CEU and WG Rickle.
Yeah. That's true. It's very true. I think that really comes from, I'm very comfortable in my own skin, but I'm also like, I would prefer it if, mm-hmm. I could deflect everyone.
Yeah.
So I do, you know, I don't know. I started when I was really young. I just liked being funny and loud yeah. and crazy. But for me, that was more of a way to make sure that people didn't see how weird I really was, you know?
Yeah.
If they're just like, oh, that guy's crazy. That worked, you know? And I think this is kind of a part of it. I've always wanted to wear a costume and, you know, or some kind of uniform and, but I never wanted to be a cop. I'd rather be a Ghostbuster, you know?
Yeah.
This is just kind of, I'd realized in college, like, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I don't care. I don't want to wear normal clothes. I want to wear these things. And so now I've actually even stripped most of my wardrobe down just to plain t-shirts and, you know, the same color scheme. And like Steve Jobs, I've always dug that about Steve Jobs. He's got that one thing. That's what he does, you know? So yeah, the CEU, it was a big part of the work I made when I was in college, and then I got out of college, and I didn't have access to a metal foundry or a glass studio, and because when I made in college, dealt a lot also with mm-hmm. cast metal,
yeah,
and that kind of broke me for a while. I didn't make any work for a couple years, and it wasn't until I moved down to Louisville and I eventually started sweeping floors at this glass studio and kind of working my way in that I started to make work again, but the game had changed. You know, I didn't have the same facility, and so I had to kind of yeah. start over. And I've always loved copper. I used a little bit of it back in the day, but I always just collected it because I thought, I'm going to use this eventually, you know?
Yeah.
And I was starting to design some work, and it still had sort of looked like my old stuff. And then one day I stumbled onto a photo of the first transistor. Mm-hmm. Which, if you look at a photo of that thing, there's nothing about it that says, hi, I'm a little bit of, you know, circuitry that's going to change the world. It looks like a sculpture. It's like zigzaggy lines of yeah. wire, and it's just crazy. And that made me realize that I could make sculpture that had this playful electronic component, but was also very sculptural and poetic, and it kind of stood on its own. So nowadays, it's like I started way off in the future with spaceships and time machines, mm-hmm. and that was all about, I sort of extroverted, as about the world and like utopia and trying to figure things out. And, And then I got really introverted, and I came back, and when I started making work again, it was about the guts, it was about the inner workings, yeah. It was about the earliest of experiments with electricity and this phenomenon, trying to make it do something for you. So,
yeah.
CEU, I don't know if CEU has as much to do with what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I haven't figured out the whole mythology yet, and I've decided I'm going to stay here and kind of gradually work my way back to the future. So
yeah,
maybe in like 20 years I'll be making spaceships again, but they'll probably look pretty different.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned in your general artist statement about how your work is very symbolic of the kind of connections that we as people try to make on a daily basis. And I was kind of wondering maybe if you wanted to go into those connections, what you see in your work.
Yeah. A lot of my work usually has, like, the glass components are more focal points, you know, mm-hmm. and those generally have to do with people or maybe two ideas within my own mind, or
mm-hmm.
or maybe it's something I'm seeing, like, me and a group of people or two groups of people, you know. I mean, it kind of varies. I just see it as like object and object, and then how are they related, and that relationship in technology, at least in electronics, you know, is about that physical connection, so the wiring between mm-hmm. them. So that's always been a nice point to sort of like the two objects establish the thing, and then the connection says something about the two things together, you know. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes they're broken, you know, sometimes they're barely hanging on. Mm-hmm. I've been really into fuses lately.
Yeah.
Fuse, like in the dictionary of electronics, I found the definition of a fuse, and it was really short. It was like a sacrificial device. I kind of left it at that.
I guess I could see that, yeah.
Yeah, and it seemed really heavy. It didn't seem like it was talking about some really simple thing. And so I've started playing with fuses and burning them, breaking them, and having that be this part of this chain of things. And I'm working on a piece actually right behind me here. It looks mm-hmm. sort of like an old circuit board that is going to have a fuse that's mm-hmm. still intact, but then this big component on the side that looks like the big fragile, like precious thing is going to be broken because the fuse failed to do its job. Yeah. So that, you know, sometimes it's an internal struggle. Sometimes it's external.
Can I ask a personal question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you feel that, because a lot of your stuff is, I feel like you mentioned something about the weak connection and how your stuff looks kind of antiqued and a little run down, for lack of better words.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that your own personal connections with people seem weak, or just as us, as a people in general, our connections are weak?
Hmm.
I know that's like a really loaded question, but you that's know, it, it, you know, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, as you should be. I do feel like, I definitely fluctuate. Mm-hmm. There are moments where I feel very well connected.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's like one day, and the next day I wake up and I feel like, wow, no one knows who I am.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll feel, lost or separate or like I just don't belong, or, you know, I go through a whole string of emotions and mm-hmm. feelings about it all. And I think I've never really been driven too much by happiness to make artwork. I'm usually driven by sadness. And
mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where my work tends to land. When I want to make something, when I really want to feel like for me I need to say something and get it out there, it usually ends up being about a broken or a weak connection. And I think that has a lot to do with me and just the way my mind works. Maybe just because it's a wild one, you know, it's sort of a roller coaster sometimes. And
yeah, definitely.
One day is, like I said, one day is good, and the next day it feels like everything's changed.
Art's about communication, and I feel like that's why most artists make it, because they have something they have to say or something they need to release.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I try to do it in a way, like we were saying before, that isn't a, when you look at the work, it's not about me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was me, then my, because all I have are my experiences, all I have is my mind. So it comes from some personal stuff, but I want to hopefully make things in a way that people can see themselves in it, you know, so
yeah.
They can find something in there and like sort of a, like in my statement, I talk about like a template, you know.
Yeah.
I take personal stuff and I try to strip out all my own details, but I really liked the template idea, the big shapes, the big moves of this thing I'm thinking about. So I'll try to make that. There's a piece over here.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to see, but it's got this big chunk and then this long wire holding up this little ball.
Yeah.
That actually came, I made that one thinking about the whole 99 versus 1%.
Oh, okay. And okay.
I loved the numbers game, you know?
Yeah.
And it's titled Relativity of Advantage because mm-hmm. you have this little ball floating up here. It's like, I'm on top of the world. But then this giant mass is the reason the little ball's up there. It's holding it up, you know? So, like, who's got the ball, really?
Yeah,
who's
it's a weird balancing game.
Yeah.
Outside of, like, you know, creative concepts and things, are any of your pieces, like, functional? Do they serve, like, a... Do that they, like, work?
That's a great question.
Like, you know, light up or something?
That you just landed on a huge topic, by the way.
All right. Awesome.
So I get that question a lot.
Yeah.
And
I would assume you would.
Yeah. And what often comes with that question too is the question is asked and then I'm taking a breath and then I from them I just get this barrage of ideas about what they think it should do, you know, cuz you could have this thing light up and this could do this cuz it looks like it does that. And for a while, I went through sort of a self-conscious period. I was like, I need to get smarter. I need to make this stuff work. And the time machine that I mentioned before mm-hmm. actually does, it has some motors and some lights.
Oh,
and pulsates.
Cool.
And, you know, it was about that sort of active experience, which I really enjoyed. But when I started making this stuff, and actually that piece right there is the first piece I made, the two pods. It's called Short Circuit,
oh, okay.
A Failure to Balance Mismatched
that
Potential.
One in the front there?
Yeah, yeah. I made that one, and I broke the connection, mm-hmm. so it didn't work. So I didn't have to answer that question. Well, it's broken, that's why. You know. And then, man, like I said, I got these questions and people telling me this stuff, and I felt self-conscious, like I really should because that would be great and cool, and I know everyone's like kind of wanting it. And it was one day one person was doing the same thing. They told me what it should do, and they said, does it work? Because if it does, it should make it do this or that. And I realized that they are exactly where they should be because they have met me halfway. I have set up this mystery, this conundrum for them, and they are so invested that they're telling me all the things they think it should be doing and creating all the things that it does in their mind. And they're, you know, because I've been thinking about it and it should do this and it should do that. And that is so precious. That is so where it's at for me. Because in a day and age where everything is so flashy
yeah.
and it does everything for you, you can just hit a button and it'll tell you what song's on the radio,
yeah.
you know. It's important that we still strive and have to figure things out for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I come from a more romantic idea of sculpture, and that was mm-hmm. my sculpture professor in college. He was great. He didn't make anything that was kinetic or lit up or anything.
Yeah.
He just made these beautiful figurative things and like sort of playing with this sort of dream state of the figure. And, but they sometimes they're big, sometimes they're just a small thing that sat on a pedestal. And I really loved that. I loved that you could go and look at something and there it would be for the next 500 years, 1,000 years, until somebody, you know, if it's a cast metal, until somebody melts it back down, you know. So I want this stuff to kind of be that same thing. I don't want to ever have to, like, have people do maintenance on it and try to figure out how
yeah.
I made it. So it's always just going to be there, kind of in this stagnant state. But in the mind, hopefully it's doing all kinds of things. And you know, people, like I said, have kind of met me halfway. And they are using their mind to fill in blanks, and I just get to set up interesting questions and mysteries.
I'm so glad I asked that question. I did not expect that response, but no, it's good. You know, it just seemed like such a really general question.
Yeah, that was great. Like I said, it's been the topic of many discussions. I get that question a lot.
I mean, that, in my opinion, is essentially one of those things that art is supposed to do, is just provoke thought.
Yeah. And, you know, there's great artists out there, like Arthur Ganson.
Mm-hmm.
He's a sculptor that builds these amazing machines and hand makes these gears. And there's sort of these great little poems. He has one that's called The Thinking Chair. And it's this
mm-hmm.
big rock, and it just all these gears make this little chair kind of walk around the perimeter of this rock. It's really great. And I think he does that really well. He uses moving parts and actually builds machines that do something. to a good end, because you can still think about it for a while, and that's, you know, thought-provoking. And maybe I'll do that, and I'll say this, too. You know, I mentioned before how I started in the future, and then I jumped way back to the beginning, and I'm going to take my time working back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someday I'll make my stuff work and do something. But I have decided, and this is not for the viewer, this is for me, that if my sculpture ever does anything, if it lights up or moves or whatever, it's not going to be fake. It's not going to be with LEDs and batteries and motors or, you know, plugging into the wall. I'm going to build a handmade photophylactic cell, and it'll be a giant installation, and that is collecting sunlight and converting it into electricity, and then it's going to move down to this set of things that I build. So it's not fake. It is all genuine. It is a real working bit of technology. And I really like the idea of the early computers, you know, these first computers the size of a giant room, you know, and I'm thinking maybe I could do that too, just have like rows and rows and rows of these fuse-like things, and, you know, maybe some of it will still just be purely aesthetic because I wanted to have a, you know, 200 fuses. But, you know, maybe a lot of it will be functional, and it'll be there just because it is helping this machine function. And that to me is infinitely more interesting. And I think I could spend a lifetime trying to build that as opposed to having the sort of up and down and being, end up being sort of disappointed when I've just like soldered together some LEDs and batteries and tricked everyone into thinking this thing is real. And like I said, that's personal, you know, that's not really about the viewer. I know that I could fake it and maybe most people want to know the difference. But I would, and that's pretty important to me.
That's a perfect ending point. Thank you so much, Alex.
Of course.
This is awesome. To learn more about W.G. Rickle, visit wgrickle.info. That's W-G-R-I-C-K-E-L. And I'll also have images of some of his work on the website, blinddateart.wordpress.com. And at this time, I'd just like to thank everyone who came out to the Blind Date anniversary party. It was a good time. I'm going to close out with a, you know this song, a little Marvin Gaye for Alex. From the awkward to the profound, this has been Blind Date. Catch you guys next month.